Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of the show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. As is always, please get some notebook paper and pen to take notes during the show. First, we look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. From a Newsweek article by Kathy Jones, what do Wall Street titans have in common with Ada Noida, an 80-year-old grandmother? They have all found themselves deeply in debt and desperate for a way out. From her mobile home in St. Augustine, Florida, Noida told Newsweek, "My outflow was more than my intake." According to Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, and President Bush, that's pretty much what's happening to several major financial institutions in the current economic crisis. In the last month, the government has brokered three bailouts, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, AIG, totaling nearly $400 billion. In Washington and on Wall Street, there are dire warnings that more corporate failures are awaiting us in the months ahead. While a solution is being debated, the front-running fix is Paulson's original $700 billion bailout. Taxpayer-funded, it's designed to steady the markets by strengthening ailing companies and easing the credit crunch. Noida's options were fewer, far less complex, and didn't include an emergency influx of cash. A child of the Depression, she learned from her parents how to live on a tight budget, but had a difficult time after double bypass surgery stopped her from working on the housekeeping staff at a local hospital. Though she worked all her life into her mid-70s, her $968 a month Social Security check didn't cover her bills, especially the new medical debt. By 2005, she'd run up $8,000 in credit card debt and had had her car repossessed. The following year, she had to do something that horrified her. She declared bankruptcy. She's not alone. In the 12-month period ending June 30, 2008, 934,009 American consumers filed for bankruptcy. That's 28% more than the 727,000 bankruptcies filed in the preceding year. It was a last resort for me, she said, but she understands why it was necessary and feels grateful for the chance to start again, with debts forgiven. I don't have any credit cards now, and I don't want any. I keep a ledger of what I spend, and I make the bills out ahead of time because I know what to pay. It disturbs Noida that Wall Street isn't following her path, and instead is taking for what could be the mother of all credit cards. The corporate people that are getting all the big bucks, they should investigate them and see who's to blame before they bail out anybody, she said. As of Friday, 166 economists, critics from both parties, and the majority of the nation, 55% according to the Los Angeles Times Bloomberg poll, agreed with her. The government can ensure a well-functioning financial industry able to make new loans to creditworthy borrowers without bailing out particular investors and institutions whose choices proved unwise, the Economist's letter to Congress said. Former Labor Secretary Robert Wright argued, the process should resemble Chapter 11 under bankruptcy. Even GOP stalwart Newt Gingrich has been making the rounds to assail the bailout, calling it a power grab that is outside the law and one that will lead to a large-scale corruption. Noida says there are already criminals who need punishing in the financial fiasco. She says, get rid of the CEOs and prosecute them. Get rid of all these people getting the big bonus. All these other Enron people who did something, they prosecuted them and they went to jail. If you or I did something wrong, we'd go to jail. Noita may get her wish. The FBI is already investigating three failed banks suspected of mortgage fraud: Countrywide Financial Corp, IndyMac Bank Corp Inc, and New Century Financial Corp, but this week expanded the probe to other firms whose financial fumblings hurt the economy: mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, insurer American International Group Inc, and investment bank Lehman Brothers. Whatever the punishment may be, Noita says, the best thing to do is take your lumps and move on. Fending off creditors, they just torment me to no end, she said. And facing bankruptcy was stressful for the octogenarian. But she got through it, and she says is doing fine on infinitesimally less than a CEO payout. She shops at thrift stores, I'm not proud, honey, and gets by on her Social Security check. I can manage. If I don't have the money, I don't spend it. I live in a mobile home with my dog and my cat, and I just thank God every day I can get up and take care of myself. Despite her limited means, she's even willing to lend a hand to the stumbling financial behemoths that are asking to take even more from her. Quote, I would tell them they need to learn how to budget and do better bookwork. Tell them, come look at my ledger and I'll show them how. And as an editor's note, Adenoida was able to file bankruptcy with the help of the Legal Aid Society office in St. Augustine, Florida. Another thing we're seeing is increased job layoffs. Hanes Knitwear has factories in North Carolina, and Hanes just closed, without any prior notice, a 450-employee plant near Forest City, 175-employee plant in Shelby, and 150-employee plant in Kings Mountain, all in North Carolina. And Hanes has provided the people who were laid off 60 days of the WARN Act termination pay, and they were told that the jobs were being outsourced to China. Along these same lines, Yahoo plans to announce a significant cost-cutting program, including layoffs, according to the Wall Street Journal. A newspaper citing people familiar with the matter said that the exact number of jobs to be cut was not clear, but it would be more than 1,000 jobs in the Sunnyvale, California-based company. Just as a note, the company Yahoo has approximately 14,000 employees at the end of June. So this would be a hefty 8-10% cut in jobs, according to the projections. And one last news point for the week. We all are noting that the prices at the gas pumps are going down. This is a great benefit for us personally. It does tend to suggest some very peculiar machinations that are going on in the government and in big business pending the upcoming election. I've seen some suggestions amongst analysts that after the election we will see once again an escalation in the gas prices. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And now for the second segment of our show, we're going to continue to look at our own finances and our own plans to get out of debt and to stay there and to develop some wealth in a simple, practical way, not necessarily becoming millionaires, but making sure that we are solvent, ahead of the game, comfortable, and living life in a healthy, holistic way. I start this section of the show with an important credit because the thoughts, ideas, and examples used are from or based on the works, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors, and I highly recommend their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. First, I'd like to recap some of the important points from last week's show. And also, I want to alert you that you can always go to the archives at www.kruufm.com under Life and Debt, and you can listen to all of the prior shows that have been aired, as one show does build upon the prior shows. So the first new point we discussed last week was debt consolidation, and this is the help that most commonly is peddled by credit counselors. It promises to roll your debts into one easy monthly payment, but what the company usually is doing in reality is just offering to lend you money to pay your debts, and you need to always fall back on the fundamental principle that you can never borrow your way out of debt. You can't take more debt on to get out of debt. There are no shortcuts to pay what you owe. Your consolidated debt would normally have no better interest rate than you would have gotten while doing a little shopping on your own. You have to remember that these companies are in the business of making a profit for themselves, and they do that in three ways. One is buried in the fine print, and some of these contracts are extra points and fees that you pay up front for the consolidation services. That's very typical. Two, they stretch out the payments forever and ever, and so you never get to pay off your debt at all. And three, they don't mention in the upfront advertising that they are planning to take a second mortgage on your house, which, as we discussed in the past, is a terrible financial mistake that could eventually cost you your home. The sum total effect of this is to keep you in debt longer, leave you paying a lot more interest than you have to, and maybe even putting your house at risk. Debt consolidation is a gamble, and it could leave you worse off than if you never consolidated. So just make the payments yourself. In the long run, you will be making a better situation for yourself and you will save money. The second point we discussed was the credit repair and FICO repair kits, which are usually from advertisements promising to repair your credit as if it were a broken down vehicle and that only an expert can safely fix. They normally make some big promises. You see this especially in emails that they send, from spam emails. They'll say, we can erase your bad credit 100% guaranteed. We can remove bankruptcies, judgments, liens, and bad loans from your credit file forever. Or we can create a new credit identity legally. And of course, that's a good way to violate the law and wind up in jail. In effect, you're paying them money for some routine advice, which is readily available on the internet, along with a copy of your credit report. Plus, you are giving them your name and email address, and they usually get these over to credit counselors and anyone else who wants to turn a profit from your difficulties. So this is not a good plan. Remember, there are no quick fixes for your credit score. It's just a matter of paying your bills month in and month out and double-checking your credit report once or twice a year to make sure that you are advancing. And as we discussed in the past, you can correct most errors on your own. This is a whole show in the past discusses this. And of course, if there is a serious problem, you may need to talk to your attorney. But either way, forget about the repair kinds of deals. Put your credit score out of your mind. Frankly, what's more important is just stay focused on paying off your debts and not how you're being perceived at this point. Another point we discussed was keeping your eye on your credit card interest rates, that there's some fine print in credit card contracts, which are somewhat illusory contracts. They can change the terms whenever they want, and that interest rate can be altered whenever they want, even after you borrow the money. And we said it isn't fair, it isn't right, and in the opinion of many lawyers, it shouldn't even be legal, but it actually is. So you have to keep track of this and make sure that you don't let your guard down, because they can change your rate pretty much any time they feel like it. As I said, if your rate jumps unexpectedly, call the company, complain, get them to roll back the rate hike, and they usually do if you're going to make a fuss. They are actually counting on people overlooking what's going on with their interest rates. As I said in the past, just remember that credit card companies are in the business of getting as much of your money as they possibly can. So the ultimate goal is to get rid of credit cards in your life, as I have discussed before. The next point I discussed was trying to maneuver your credit cards so you switch credit cards to a lower rate of interest and basically keep doing that until you run out of options, and in theory you're saving a lot of money by going to lower rate credit cards. This is kind of a dance, and whether or not you should do this really depends. We did a self-test asking ourselves whether or not this kind of maneuvering can save you money, and we'll go over that again. The self-test, basically the questions are, and these are yes or no answers: will it take you 6 months or more to pay off your debt? Yes or no. Are you paying more than 12% on a large part of your debt? Will you commit the time to read all terms and conditions carefully before you shift to a low interest credit card? Will you commit to making your payments on time every single month, no matter what? Will you commit to double checking your interest rate every month? Will you commit to keeping detailed records on how much money you transferred, when you transferred it, and how much you paid? Are you willing to stand up for yourself if the credit card company charges you the wrong amount, and to back yourself up with copies of all your records? And finally, will you stick with your commitment not to add any new debt on that new credit card? So to make this kind of tactic work, you have to answer yes to every single one of those questions. But if you have answered no to any one of the questions, then you are putting yourself at risks and it's not really worth it. They issue those cards because they know most people who switch balances aren't and can't be that careful. It takes a lot of work to be that careful, and they end up blowing a lot of money on the credit card when the interest rates shift upwards, which ultimately they do, or the person inadvertently or intentionally uses a credit card to buy something, adding to the debt. And this becomes a huge problem for people, and they're really hoping that that low introductory rate won't apply very quickly because you've been pulled into the game. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and the name of this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. So now let's say that this actually can work for you, that you have answered yes to all those questions, and you want to maneuver safely. So what you do in terms of changing credit cards, you start with an offer for a low interest rate credit card, and typically as low as possible. If it's not below 8%, then it's not low enough. And these offers often come in the form of flyers or blank checks. You can also pursue this yourself and do a little bit of investigation. Call your credit card company and ask for a low rate balance transfer, or do some hunting on the internet yourself. Now, point number one, you need to read the terms and conditions of the new credit card. How do you qualify for the low rate is the first question. And just because you're pre-approved, that does not mean that the credit card company will automatically give you the credit card at that rate. They may put you through another kind of screening process, and even though it was advertised at 6%, you could wind up being charged a lot more. So that's important that you don't transfer until after you've gotten approval and read the final terms and conditions. And also, how long does the low rate last? If that low rate is not lasting for at least 6 months, forget it. That's not anything that's going to help you out. The third important point in the terms and conditions is the transfer fees. They inevitably are going to charge you something, and you have to figure that out. And it usually is a percentage of what you transfer, and see how much it is. If it's going to be a substantial amount of money, you want to walk away from that deal. They often think that you're not going to notice it, but you have to pay attention to that. Point number two is pick the best deal and transfer your balance on the best deal. And what you want to do is move all your high interest debt to one low interest card, rather than this temptation to sign up for many, many new credit cards, even if they all have low interest rates. The challenge here is that if you take out new credit cards, several new credit cards, then what you're doing is inevitably creating a flag for your credit rating, and it will ultimately lower your credit rating even more by having so many cards. So you want to keep the number of cards to a minimum, and in effect, you want to keep things simple, and that's really the main point here. Keep them as simple as possible and minimize the risk of hurting your credit rating. The third point is you just follow the rules very meticulously. Make your payments on time. And note that the credit card company is looking for the slightest excuse to increase your interest rate. So you have to be like Mary Poppins, practically perfect in every way, making sure that your debt is being paid each month on that credit card. The fourth point would be you need to check your statement carefully every single month. And the minute you see that something is not right, the interest rates rise unexpectedly or some extra fee appears, you have to call the company and challenge the charge. And if they're not going to relent on that, then you need to take a different card and do it quite quickly. The fifth point is to transfer to the next card before your low rate ends. So you mark that date on your calendar and you make sure that you make the shift to a new low interest credit card before that date comes. Because if you exceed that date, then this kind of maneuvering will not work for you, obviously. It only works if you get this card paid off or transfer the balance somewhere else before the time runs out. And the sixth point is to keep very meticulous records. And this is hard for many people. And so you have to consider whether this really can work for you, because you need to keep a copy of the credit card application, which is important. And many people don't do that, but you need to keep a copy of that. If you have a computer, you can actually scan it in and have a file of all those scanned documents and the billing statements and every payment. You need to keep that recorded. So when you have something come up and you talk to the company, you write down that person's name, the date of the call, the name of the person, and you write down what you agreed on. And plus you have all of this documentation to back you up when you are calling people. And so that is your evidence and the weapons in your arsenal to deal with this kind of maneuvering. And then the seventh point, is don't put any new charges on the card. And this is hard for us. We have these credit cards in our wallets and we just pull one out and we make a payment. If you get a credit card like this, what you have to understand is that when you make the transfer, that transfer is at a low interest rate. But when you purchase something with that card, it's going to be at a very high interest rate. And what more is that the high interest rate purchase is not paid off until the entire transfer balance is paid off. So it goes beneath the transfer balance in terms of being able to get at it. So you're not going to be able to pay it right away. So you're going to be paying high interest rate on those purchases. And you have to be very careful about that. They want you to do that. That's one of the tricks of the trade, to get you to pay as much of the interest as possible, even though you've been brought into the contract with this idea of a low interest rate. Now, of course, this is a lot of work, and yet if you are carrying a whole lot of debt, this kind of maneuvering can save you hundreds of dollars and help you to get out of debt much, much earlier. months and sometimes even years earlier if you're able to do this. But don't forget that this maneuvering is dangerous, that there are a lot of traps and pitfalls, and you need to look out for yourself. No one else is going to look out for you, so you have to be very careful when you do this kind of maneuvering with your credit cards to lower balances. It's really important that you understand the whole concept of the credit card interest situation. From an article by Robert Lawless in The Nation, he says that the Supreme Court's opinion in Marquette National Bank versus First of Omaha Corporation in 1978 sent us down a very tortuous path. The seeds of that opinion were sown more than a century earlier when, amidst the chaos of the Civil War, Congress passed the National Bank Act of 1864 with the goal of creating a national banking system to help stabilize the nation's finances. Among its provisions was a rule that prevented a state from applying harsher laws to national banks than the state applied to its own locally chartered banks. But more than 110 years later, the Marquette case found that a national bank was not only protected against discrimination, but remained subject to its home state laws when it transacted business in another state. So essentially, the bank could export the state law whenever it was physically located in any state where it might find customers. A few states repealed their usury laws, and national banks rushed to plant lending operations in those states. So the result was that, in the end, we see no more state usury laws as a check on abusive consumer lending. Banks now can lend at whatever price they chose. Consumers whose financial circumstances previously precluded them from borrowing now found large lines of credit available to them, but often at exorbitant interest rates. As debt grew during the 80s and 90s, consumer credit was euphemistically said to have been democratized. Democratized debtors tended to pay later than their earlier counterparts, and the banks quickly saw an opportunity to profit from the fees these wayward debtors were charged. How much of a fee? In 1996, a case known as Smiley versus Citibank in South Dakota, the U.S. Supreme Court had the answer. Whatever fee allowed by the state where the bank might choose to locate a lending operation, that was the fee that could be charged. Of course, the bank just happened to have picked a state that had no regulation of credit card fees. So after Smiley, credit card fees became an important profit center as the interest charged on the debt. Customers who have always paid late were the most profitable customers to have. Now, more recently, the Supreme Court backed the Office of Comptroller of Currency, the OCC, in its effort to displace state consumer protection laws that would otherwise apply to national banks. The OCC argued that state consumer protection laws might jeopardize the safety and soundness of the national banking system, as if compliance with otherwise applicable law should be considered an unnecessary obstacle to financial stability. So the court's decision leaves the OCC, perhaps the agency most captured by the industry it purports to regulate, the sole protector of consumer interests against national banks. The tendency of banking interests to win at the expense of consumers is hardly the result of a backroom conspiracy within the Supreme Court, but the result of a legal system with built-in advantages for big business. The consumer financial industry can pick the best cases and employ the best lawyers to establish a legal principle that might entitle it to an extra $20 fee that, repeated over several billion transactions, amounts to real money. Executive branch agencies and administrations that are hostile or indifferent to consumer interests often back the industry's position. On the other side is a consumer who is probably just better off paying the extra $20 but chooses to fight. In that scenario, it is a one-sided match, obviously. So this is how the interest situation has gotten out of control for you as a credit card holder. And the final tip for the week is from Professor Elizabeth Warren. She says the rise in bankruptcies is not about something that happened last week or last month. It's about the fundamentals. It's about declining wages, rising costs, inadequate health insurance, job instability. More hardworking middle-class families simply can't make it in this economy, and it's only getting worse. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa.